Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is our chance to get together each week and have a look at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. You can send us an email or you can attach a voice message as well and we'll get your voice on air. Coming up this week, we'll be bringing you the best of CSUN 2025. Our very own Dave Williams has been out in California for the annual Assistive Technology Conference and we'll be bringing you some highlights, including chats with WeWork, OneCourt and NV Access. My invite to California never came through. Just might want to look into that, just so you know. Joining me this week is Hubert Pavalkovic. Bit of a quiet one this week in terms of co-hosts. I don't know if we've been if we've been upsetting people, but yeah, welcome in.
Yeah, something we said, I think.
Yes, might not use that aftershave again. How are things with you anyway? Has anything grabbed your attention this week?
Apart from the fact that Caesar the guide dog must have eaten my CSUN tickets, the main thing I've noticed, CSUN related actually, is the Insert J Club that Vispero have launched to celebrate the 30th anniversary of good old Jaws screen reader. So what this is an exclusive community that you can join for free, where you can get knowledge from fellow Jaws users, tips, tricks, and everything else. And you get some benefits, which at the moment include timely announcements, exclusive training sessions, and live Q&As with Jaws experts, with more benefits to come, so is being said, which is quite interesting.
Very nice, yeah. Do you know what? I feel like lately, with Vispero and they've been doing things like the Next Big Thing competition that's been running for the last couple of years. I think they've done that twice now. They've now got this Insert J Club. It really feels like, I mean, we've had NVDA for a long time, which has always been a community project. And I feel like, and maybe this is just me, maybe I'm missing something, but I feel like NVDA has been the open one and Jaws has been kind of closed off almost. And as a product, it is closed off, but it feels like now it feels a lot more open, a lot more approachable and a lot more community centric now with things like this, and this just adds to that, I guess.
I think it's what I always said, the best way to get the most out of a product, including for both developers and users alike, is to actually work more with the blind and partially sighted community. So getting this community, I think, will be crucial because there's so many people out there that use Jaws in so many different ways. And you know, I've got a JAWS certification, sure, but there's loads of things I don't know. So to be able to harness that sort of resource it's going to be fantastic, I think, for, you know, new JAWS users and more experienced users alike. And I think the best ways to learn about these sorts of products is the power of the community, really.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I've been using JAWS now on and off for probably best part of, like, 15 years, and there's still stuff that I don't know. I mean, all the different, it's going to sound really basic for, like, you know, long-term screen reader users listening, but even things like when to use the different cursors and what they do and what the difference is between them, I don't really understand. I know what I need to know, and there's always something. I'll find a keyboard shortcut or a new feature and I'll go, oh, that's new, I never knew about that. I'll Google it to learn more about it, and it's been there since, like, you know, JAWS version 7 or something. You're like, oh, right, okay. Late to that one, then.
I mean, for me, I've only recently discovered the splitting audio, which it's been around for quite a few years now. You yourself have demonstrated it on Tech Talk a good few years back, but you know, I've only recently just discovered it, and I thought, this is fantastic. But there's many JAWS users that are kind of going, I've been using this since 2022.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting. Yeah, the Insert J Club. Be My Eyes made a couple of interesting announcements this week. Not quite Be My AI, you know, revolutionary, like we saw at CSUN a couple of years ago. But they've announced, they've announced they're up to, I think, 8 million users of the app now. I don't know if that's volunteers or blind users or that number's combined, but either way, it's incredible. But also, one of the things they announced is these specialised groups, which details on this are a bit vague, at least now. But my understanding is that organisations can sign up almost to be contacted through Be My Eyes, but in a way that is kind of more specific for their clients. So I think, for example, the Guide Dogs charity in France have been one of the first to sign up to this, which I think, as far as I understand it, means that if you are a service user, say you're a guide dog owner in France, you can contact Guide Dogs via Be My Eyes, and they can give, you know, you could get put through to, say, for example, an O&M instructor or a dog health person via Be My Eyes. And obviously they know about you, they know about your specific circumstances, and they can help you out, which is, again, it's just, you know, more ways to get assistance, and to get assistance that's right for you. So I don't think this has come to the UK yet, but it's interesting. It's really interesting.
It is. And for guide dogs, I think you've mentioned a very good example there, because I'm someone who, as a guide dog owner, worries considerably about my dog. I literally, you know, I stress twice for my guide dog sometimes. So being able to have that sort of assistance via video is probably quite useful, as Cesar the guide dog is kind of doing pirouettes under the desk for some reason. You know, I think that's quite useful. And again, it's nice to see that Be My Eyes are constantly evolving and expanding what's on offer, which I think is just amazing. And, you know, they are constantly improving things, and they've, you know, they've got Applevis now. They're always thriving, which is great to see.
Yeah, and that was one of their announcements as well, that Applevis, they did share some kind of vague stats on the traffic. I think they said Applevis traffic is up 30%. I don't know when that's from, whether that's from when they took it over or whatever, but basically the main thing that I took from it is that it's still going strong and still being successful, which is, you know, incredible, and obviously thanks to their backing as well.
Yes, and they're trying to improve on their Mac content as well, because they are recruiting for an experienced Mac user to join their blog team. So hopefully we're going to be start getting a bit more Mac content as well, because I find sometimes that's not as good as it can be. And there's not as much content on certain Apple devices compared to others, for example. So it'll be nice to expand certain types of content on that website to provide information for different user bases.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, CSUN is always an interesting event, an interesting week. There's a lot going on, as always, so let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio from CSUN 2025. You will, of course, be familiar with NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access, the free screen reader brought to us from NV Access, who are based in Australia. And one of the opportunities of coming to conferences like CSUN is that we get to have a little bit of time face-to-face with people from all around the world. And joining us now is Quentin Christensen from NV Access. Welcome in, Quentin. You're celebrating 10 years with NV Access.
I am celebrating 10 years with NV Access. Thank you. Yes, it's been a wonderful 10 years. It's a great organisation to work for, a wonderful product we make, and it's great to meet everybody at places like CSUN.
Yeah, and I remember when NVDA first came along, you know, there was a lot of skepticism about, you know, how long will this be around? And I think, is it next year we'll be celebrating 20 years of NVDA?
We will, that's right. Yeah, it was 2006 that Mick Curran first started putting, can't really say pen to paper.
I know what you mean.
Finger to keyboard. Yeah. Writing code for NVDA. So it's come a long way.
Yep. And very sensibly, you moved away from version numbers and you align yourselves now to the calendar and the first release for 2025 is imminent. Tell us what's new.
It is. So 2025.1 is due out very shortly, and we will have a beta out very shortly as well. We've always said, you know, we would have liked to have had it out for CSUN, but we've always said that we'd rather push back a release to make sure it's stable, make sure it's ready, than try and meet an arbitrary deadline and put something out that's not yet ready. So some of the highlights that we've got coming in 2025.1, and it's quite a big release. We've got quite a bit in here, which is why it has been delayed a little bit. But NVDA Remote is now going to be built into NVDA core. So that is something that a lot of people have been asking for, including secure connections, which was always something that we wanted to make sure happened. Automatic add-on updates.
Oh, can I just, before you move on to the add-on updates, yes. Quentin, so NVDA Remote, this was originally a crowd-funded project from a few years back to enable NVDA users to connect remotely to somebody else's machine to offer technical support, training, that kind of thing.
Exactly, yes. Yes, so that's been a very popular add-on in the community and one that we've wanted to bring in and include and make sure was available for everybody. So
brilliant. And is that the same code, or is this being reimagined or updated in some way, or is it the NVDA remote add-in that people like me backed?
Yep, broadly it's the same code, so it'll work pretty similar to what you've used before for NVDA remote. And we've got a secure connection. You can do direct connection if you want, or through a server. So and you can choose the server. So it will be an exciting addition.
Brilliant, and offers so many possibilities in terms of employment opportunities, or just being able to help out a mate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, sorry, I cut you off. Carry on. You've got automatic updates for add-ins.
For add-ins, that's right. So we introduced the ability for add-ons to be notified of add-on updates last year. And so now we've sort of gone that next step and they can automatically update. Support for math in PDF files is another addition.
So how does that work then? Just kind of talk us through that. When you say math in PDF files.
In PDF files. So so we've been doing a bit of work in math lately and in things like working towards bringing, MathCat into NVDA, but I'm going to confuse everything by mixing too much in there. Basically just the ability to read mathematical equations in PDF files is this particular one.
Right, and that does rely on the author making that content accessible. It's not going to necessarily read every mathematical equation in every PDF, because some of those may just be pictures of equations.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's always been the issue with PDF files. It's one of those interesting, shall we say, formats that you can have a PDF file that's perfectly accessible and works really well, and one that's a photograph and doesn't read.
I know many blind people that hear PDF and reach for the garlic. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Actually, speaking of photographs and PDFs and things like that, we have tweaked the OCR, so improvements there. That's one of the main ways of accessing an otherwise inaccessible PDF is with OCR. Let's see, what else have we got? In Firefox, you can report highlighted text. So often when you do a search on the web, it will pick out a phrase off a website, and when you go to that link, it will highlight it on the page visually. Up until now, NVDA hasn't told you anything about that, but now it will read that text out for you and tell you. So far in Firefox, but we're working on getting that in Chromium-based browsers as well. Let's see, you can report current page link destination. So if a link points to somewhere else on the current page, it'll let you know that now, rather than just being magic. Improved font format reporting in LibreOffice. So I know we have a dedicated LibreOffice community and following out there. So always excited to report on new updates there. We've actually had some really good collaboration with the LibreOffice, the Document Foundation. And particularly a couple of their developers who've been interested in accessibility. So we're excited for further developments there. You can now keep your display on during sale or braille reading, which is important, because sometimes we would find that if you did sale on a long document, it would just stop talking halfway through, and that would be the point where the machine had gone to sleep and the display had turned off. Rate boost and language detection are now in SAPI 5. So we've had those in eSpeak and Windows One Core Voices for a while. So they're now in SAPI 5 as well, as well as some improvements for SAPI 4. I know we've still got people who use SAPI 4 out there, so some fixes there for you. They're the main highlights that I'd pulled out for 2025.1.
So there's a lot going on, and I know NVDA is hugely popular. You said yesterday in your presentation that your conservative estimate of the number of users is somewhere around 250,000 people actively using NVDA, and of course in dozens of countries, in dozens of languages, with Narrator improving in Windows, and obviously lots of blind people using JAWS in the workplace. Why is NVDA still so popular?
Well, I think it's so popular for a number of reasons, both because it is essentially, as feature rich and as capable as other products like JAWS, and also it's a good competitor. It's healthy to have competition in the market. So, JAWS keeps us on our toes. We hopefully like to think we keep them on their toes, and that benefits everybody in the end.
I love that sense of community around NVDA, and the fact that it is truly led by us as, you know, blind and low vision people. You know, it feels like it's our screen reader. It's the people's screen reader, and it's a place where we can try stuff. You know, so I remember, I think NVDA was one of the first screen readers to have a little audio cue for a progress bar indicator, for example. You know, that then, you know, those features perhaps the commercial guys might not get around to as a matter of priority.
Exactly, and that's one of the benefits of being open source. If you have a feature idea that you're really passionate about that maybe isn't the most common feature idea, and you've got the capability to implement it, you can do that. And that probably actually also leads into, and you're mentioning the number of countries and languages and things. One of the points that came up recently that I thought I'd touch on was language support. We had a conversation recently around and discovered that the New Zealand government recommends NVDA as a screen reader because it's the only one that includes support for Maori, the native language, there through eSpeak NG. And I know eSpeak is one of those ones that some people love, some people not so much. But eSpeak also being open source is something that people can contribute to. And one of our contributors, Bill Dengler, added, and I'm going to mangle the name, I'm sure, but Totentepec Mixi, which is a Mexican language with around 6,000 speakers. He added that to eSpeak NG, so those speakers now have access to that language. But that also means that for the first time, there's now a written documentation of that language, how to pronounce it, how to read it, and so on. So it's added benefits for that language community as well as for eSpeak and NVDA users.
Now, we've seen the commercial screen readers starting to incorporate elements of AI for image descriptions. What's the NV Access take on the role of AI in screen reading?
Absolutely. We've been looking at that and continuing to look at that. We actually have an item on our roadmap to more closely investigate that. But in fact, NVDA was arguably perhaps the first screen reader to incorporate any elements of AI, because we've had add-ons for image description, image recognition for, over 6 years now, since 2019 was one of the first add-ons that incorporated AI image description. So, it's definitely something that's not new to us, and those add-ons are quite popular, and it's definitely something that we see as a really positive use of AI.
Okay. What's next, Quentin? Looking forward, are you able to tease us with what's around the corner?
I am. So one of the big things that we're starting to work on at the moment is a secure add-on runtime. So one of the things that perhaps we're not as popular for is people know our 0.1 releases, our add-on breaking releases that mean all the add-ons need to be updated. We're working on a new secure API for that, so that once you've written an add-on and got it working in MVDA, you won't need to regularly update it every year. So that will be of benefit to developers and to end users. We are working on an integrated magnifier for low vision users. So that will be an interesting one. And one of the reasons why, one of the questions we had yesterday was why? Mm-hmm. Because there's already, you know, Windows Magnifier, which does what it does. And one of the reasons is things like being able to link and highlight, you know, the text that's being read by NVDA with something sighted on the screen or visual on the screen. So yeah, that will be something good to come. 64-bit, NVDA is a 32-bit application currently, so we're working on 64-bit. Let's see, mini braille enhancements. So we've been working on multi-line. Multi-line displays are becoming extremely popular if you look around CSUN, but in general,
expensive, some would say,
but they're going to become more popular. And you know, even now you can use multi-line in NVDA. It will just read through paragraphs for you or display paragraphs on a multi-line display for you, and we're working on improving that support. We did a lot of work with users last year too, from conversations here at CSUN to a couple of surveys that we did with users on what they need out of Braille support. So more things to come there.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And I really appreciate your commitment to keeping the LibLui tables current in NVDA as well. RNIB has contributed a lot of fixes, particularly to the UEB tables, and it's fantastic to see those coming through in the NVDA releases.
It is, and it's fantastic to see the ability for people to contribute to things like that and bring them to a wide audience. So thank you.
Great. Well, look, Quentin, I really appreciate your time and sharing just a little bit of a flavour of what's happening at MV Access. Of course, you have your in-process newsletter that comes out periodically, and people can check out the website, mvaccess.org.
They can, and one of the things that we've added recently as well is you can sign up for notification by email of in-process, of new releases and of other news. So you can get all that by email now.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thank you so much again for your time. Quentin Christensen from NV Access joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
I'm with the gentlemen at WeWalk. Just introduce yourselves, gents, for our listeners, and then we'll talk all about the WeWalk version 2.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Alfonso from WeWalk. I am the growth manager.
Excellent. Growth manager. That I've not heard that one before, Joe. That's a great one.
Hello, everyone. This is Kürşat Ceylan speaking. I'm co-founder of WeWalk, and I'm blind from birth. I'm super happy to joining your podcast.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, we have spoken previously on RNIB Connect Radio about WeWalk. And, of course, you're leading the way when it comes to smart cane technology. So why don't you just talk us through what has happened in the last year since you launched the WeWalk 2?
Yes, last year we launched WeWalk Smart Cane 2, and we had pre-order periods, and we have started to ship our products just 2 months ago. You know, we for the last 1 year we were in pre-order stage, and right now we are officially in the market, and also we developed our product more and more, and even tomorrow we will talk about our another product designed and developed for O&M instructors.
Wow, okay, well, just hang fire on the new product. Just remind listeners who are perhaps not familiar of the kind of the unique points about the WeWalk 2. What is special about WeWalk 2? Maybe listeners maybe had a little try of WeWalk a few years ago. It's changed quite a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah. thank you so much for asking, and I will pass to Joe to answer this question.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to take that question. So the Smart Cane is our latest release. Our first one was released about 4 years ago. We listened to feedback from the community, and we've improved it significantly. So one of the main changes is its form factor. It's much slimmer, much sleeker compared to the prior version. It's very similar to a traditional cane. So I just want you to imagine a traditional cane, but we've chopped off the handle and we've replaced it with technology. Technology such as a compass that allows you to be able to get accurate turn-by-turn navigation. There's built-in buttons into it as well. So you, basically what you do is you pair it up to your smartphone via Bluetooth. And then once you do that, you'll be able to explore timetables for nearby public transit options. You'll be able to find popular points of interest such as restaurants, cafes, and museums. And you'll even be able to navigate to those places all directly from your cane. It has built-in speakers that allows you to get audio output. So you can also hook up your Bluetooth headset, bone conducting headset, and get directions directly from those. And then with the built-in buttons, you can do things such as access the voice assistant. So with a simple push of a button, you can ask questions such as take me to the closest cafes, and it'll list out all of the closest cafes around you. You can even ask questions such as tell me about R&IB or tell me about London, for example, and it'll output all of the information directly through the cane's speakers.
And what's the feedback been like? Kershaw there just said that you've been on the market now for a couple of months. What are customers telling you?
Yeah, so far the reception has been very positive. Actually, we were at the Consumer Electronics Show back in January, and we won Engadget Awards for Best Invention of CES, just because people were quite impressed in terms of how we were integrating AI into the Smart Cane. People have also been quite impressed in terms of the form factor. In fact, there's been some times where people have accidentally taken our Smart Cane instead of their traditional cane while stopping by our booth, forgetting that it's our Smart Cane just because of how similar they are to one another. They also just love the fact that everything is self-contained in one single cane, as opposed to having to switch between different apps. So for example, if you need to navigate somewhere, if you need to find popular points of interest, you might have to switch between different apps. With our cane, you can place your phone in your pocket and you can access all of those features directly from your cane. So people love just being able to do that directly from the Smart Cane too.
One of the things that I was quite pleased about, you had listened to the feedback from those of us in the UK where it rains quite a lot, and you had worked on a solution to that problem of going out in wet weather.
Ah, yes. I'm glad you brought that up, Dave. So this second generation is waterproof, weatherproof, so you can use it out in the rain or in the snow. And what's nice too is there's a sensor feature on it as well. So if you are using it outdoors, it'll detect head-level obstacles such as tree branches, stop signs, anything that your traditional cane may not be able to detect. And you'll be able to get audio as well as haptic feedback. So for example, as you're approaching a tree branch, when it detects it, you'll feel that haptic feedback on the cane, or if you have it set to audio mode, you'll hear a beep, 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 beep to let you know to avoid that obstacle. And CoreShot is demonstrating it right now, and you can hear that beep to let you know that there's an obstacle up ahead. So we're trying to keep that head level area safe. Anything below your head, you still need your traditional cane skills to detect.
Absolutely, and that's important to emphasize that none of this technology replaces those core skills of using a cane to discover obstacles on the ground in front of you, giving you time to, you know, make a course correction or stop safely. I notice with the WeWalk 2 as well, you've included a light on there. Just sort of explain why you made that decision.
Yes. So with the flashlight, you hold down a button, and when you enable it, that will allow you to be able to find things in darkly lit conditions. So for example, if you're a low vision user, you misplace your keys, you can turn on that flashlight to be able to locate them. Or it's just a nice safety feature if you're going to be walking around late at night, you want to be more visible by pedestrians or traffic, you can go ahead and keep that enabled the entire time. And it's a nice safety feature to make sure that you're easily recognizable in darkly lit conditions.
I don't know, did you mention or not, but WeWalk Smart Cane 2 comes with voice assistant technology. So you can simply talk to your cane and it talks you back like a magic wand. So you can ask any question. Let's try it out. Take me to Starbucks.
found 6 addresses. I will sort it based on distance, starting with the nearest location.
So it found 6 different Starbucks. I can pick one of them and start navigation to go there. And also, even when I arrived the Starbucks, I can ask, is there a chocolate croissant on Starbucks menu? Because this technology is linked to the ChatGPT, then it can answer any of your questions.
Wow. Well, that's a lot to take in. And certainly it will be important, I think, for potential customers to get a little bit of hands-on time and a bit of a demonstration. And is that something that your dealers are able to offer? Because clearly it's going to be, you know, quite a big step change for somebody who's never used a smart cane before to become familiar with some of those features and capabilities.
Yeah, of course. So in terms of training, we offer 2 hours premium training that they can purchase directly through us. However, we want to make sure that the dealers feel comfortable with being able to deliver that in-person training. So, for example, if you want to purchase it through your favorite dealer, or if you want to visit one of your dealers, they can deliver the training sessions as well. There is a low learning curve to it, so they'll be able to pick it up right away. And it's one of those things where we want to make sure our users are comfortable with using the product, and we don't want the product collecting dust on the shelf. So if they ever have any questions, we have an excellent support team as well, and we want to make sure, again, our users are very comfortable with being able to take the smart cane to outside on their own.
Now, I think at the start of the conversation, you teased us with a little bit of a new product announcement, potentially. Are we able to talk about that?
Yes. So tomorrow we will have a presentation, and we will talk about our brand new solution developed for O&M instructors. So I'm a blind person and I trained how to use white cane. But when I'm getting trainings, when I left from the classroom, my mobility instructor is not able to observe, monitor my white cane usage technique. So with the new technology we developed, right now we're gonna provide a dashboard where mobility instructors are gonna able to monitor their students, their trainees' mobility improvement, because in order to develop better mobility skills, you know, some metrics are so important, such as cane angle with the ground, walking speed, confidence level, and through this dashboard, mobility instructors will able to adjust and personalize their sessions, trainings, and tomorrow we will talk more about it. Joe, if there's any missing points, so please jump in. Yeah.
No, I think you summarized it quite well. As Kurshad mentioned, it's a great way to make sure that everyone is using correct cane technique. Anyone who is using it, they have the option on whether or not they want to share the data with their O&M, so they can certainly choose not to share their data if they don't want to, but it benefits both sides. And from an organizational perspective, if someone, for example, wants to better report on how big of an impact their organization is making towards their sight loss community, they can also use those metrics in order to be able to share that information. You can also do self-reported confidence levels as well. So after each journey that your student takes, they can rate themselves to make sure that they feel confident going out there on their own. So again, a lot of benefits for both the O&Ms and the students to make sure that everyone who is using their cane is using it correctly and is confident in using it outside.
So for our blind listeners curious to know more about the WeWalk 2, or maybe a mobility instructor or two keen to learn more about those tools for developing mobility skills, how do we learn more? What's the best way to reach out to you guys?
Yes, so you can go on our website at www.wewalk.io. Again, that's www.wewalk.io.
Okay, and just before I let you go, one final question. Don't want to put you on the spot. Where are we with the We Assist service? I know you were piloting a remote assistance service during a limited couple of hours in the week. What's the latest on that project?
Yeah, Kushal, would you like to give more details?
So right now this system is running in Turkey, and also we are about to start expanding into different countries, but we can talk this latest news about the We Assist in our next podcast, and we will share more about it. But definitely, I can say something. You know, there are something coming up. So we will be sharing soon.
Okay. Kushal likes to leave it on a cliffhanger.
There we go. So that's a little teaser for next time. So fantastic. Thank you very much, Joe and Kushal from WeWalk. That's wewalk.io. Thank you for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
We'll be hearing more from Dave a little bit later on. And if you've got any thoughts on the things that have been announced and the things that have been going on at this year's SIGSUN, we would love to hear from you. Get in touch with us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Are you struggling with the cost of living crisis?
We know blind and partially sighted people are affected more than most.
With many facing additional, unavoidable costs, like taxi journeys, assistive technology and support in the home.
RNIB offers free, practical and emotional support to help you deal with increasing financial pressures.
Find out more by visiting rnib.org.uk/cost-of-living.
Or call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999.
RNIB, standing with you through every challenge.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We now head back to the CSUN Conference 2025 with Dave Williams out on the exhibition floor.
This is RNIB Connect Radio at the California State University of Northridge Assistive Technology and Disability Conference 2025. And we are joined by a familiar voice, the head of digital content at Sight and Sound, Stuart Lawler. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. How are you?
I'm very good, Dave. It's nice to see you on the West Coast of America. So great to be here.
Indeed. And just tell everyone a little bit about your role at Sight and Sound. Obviously, Sight and Sound, a major provider of assistive technology for customers across the UK and Ireland. You create content?
Yes, indeed. So I'm responsible for some of our digital content outputs, including our podcast and webinar series. So we run a webinar once a month every Wednesday, but we also do other one-off sessions that I plan and execute with our partners, and I'm also responsible for the Sight and Sound podcast, as well as managing Sight and Sound's presence in the Republic of Ireland. Do all that stuff.
And what brings you to CSUN this year?
Well, this year it's CSUN for Sight and Sound is a great chance for us to connect with our partners, the people whose products we represent, but also to look at new products and see what's happening. And because, as you know, Sight and Sound don't manufacture anything, but we spend our time that we would be spending in manufacturing choosing what we hope are the best products throughout the world for our customer base.
Let's talk about some of those products then. You and I also work together on the Braillists Foundation, and so it's no secret that we're both massively strong advocates for Braille, and there are a couple of new or soon to be new Braille products that have really piqued your interest this year.
Yeah, well, let's start maybe with one, Dave, that is low tech. No technology in this, but it's just launched a couple of weeks ago, and that's the Braille Doodle. You and I were talking about this just before we went on air, and something that's been really, people have had a lot of interest with, both from a teaching Braille to children perspective, but also seasoned Braillists using this to be creative, not just for maybe writing Braille and making Braille letters, but for drawing and just being creative. So people are using this in all sorts of ways, to draw graphs, to draw shapes, to illustrate things, maybe for blind people. Somebody sighted at home who's trying to show you maybe a map or draw something out for you can do this on the Braille Doodle. Really, really simple device, and something that people have taken to.
Can you just explain, for those who haven't had hands-on with the Braille Doodle yet, how does it work?
So it has ball bearings that are pulled out by a little stylus, which is magnetic. So on one side of the Braille Doodle, you have cut out Braille cells with 6 ball bearings in each cell. So you can pull them up with the stylus and make Braille letters or Braille numbers or contractions or anything that you want to make. But on the reverse side of the Braille Doodle, there is a free-form set of ball bearings with no cells. So there aren't any squares on the reverse side, and you can draw or create any kind of shapes that you wish with the stylus.
What kind of size are we talking about here, Stuart?
I think it's the size of a largish laptop, so it would sit in your, if you were carrying it around with a laptop, or think of a sort of maybe slightly wider than a laptop, with your, as I say, with your Braille cells on one side and your free form on the other.
Right, and is it quite lightweight?
Very, relatively light. You'll always hear the little ball bearings jingling as you lift it up, and sometimes you're afraid they're going to fall out, but they're well secured. And the stylus is connected to the device with a string, so it's not going to fall off. And as I said, the end of the stylus has a magnet, so you can pull up the ball bearings.
So obviously, those drawings that you make by magnetizing the ball bearings, they're temporary.
Yes.
So when you pick it up, they then disappear. Is that?
No. When you push, you can just push the ball bearings back in, and the drawing is gone. So you can just you can erase it quickly.
Okay. So it's just purely a mechanical device.
There are no electronics in it.
You don't have to charge it.
No.
There's no batteries to worry about. And it sounds like it's probably quite durable, quite rugged, would you say?
Well, so far, and we've had them since Christmas, haven't had any complaints. And it does come with a couple of stencils that you can use. So there are some shapes already that you can trace if you want to practice drawing. And of course, you can create your own as well.
Right. And are there learning resources to support using something like this?
Yeah. So there's loads of information and some learning videos on touchpadprofoundation.org. So this is a product of the Touchpad Pro Foundation, who work out of New York.
Right. Okay. Well, the Braille Doodle, available from Sight and Sound in the UK, and we look forward to learning more about that in the future. What else is grabbing your attention? Because I know you are, like me, very keen to discover emerging Braille technology.
Yeah, and some, given that I have yet to walk around the exhibition hall, but what I have been looking at and talking to in the last few weeks is the people from New Haptics, who are a startup out of the University of Michigan, and they're developing a 4-line Braille display that they had. I think you saw it last year, Dave. I have yet to see it, but they have made some refinements to the technology, so we're going to look at that this year. And they're hoping to have this available later in the year as a device that will connect to your, certainly Windows machine, and I don't know about anything else at the moment.
So this New Haptics Braille display, a 4-line Braille display, it uses compressed air, I understand, to raise the dots, is that right?
That's right, and it has a pump that you plug in. So I know last year it was not designed to be portable, so you would use this, I suppose, connected to a workstation at your desk, and it would have to be powered, as you said, for the air to raise and lower the Braille cells. I'm not sure this year if they have managed. I think they have managed to make some changes so that they're still using air, but you may be a little more portable with the device than was the case last year.
Okay, well, that's going to be one to look at, and I'm sure there'll be lots of other Braille devices once the exhibition opens.
Absolutely, and we're looking forward to, you know, seeing what's new, but also catching up with our friends in the industry already to see what plans they have for the future. So it's an exciting time, I think, for anybody who's interested in not just Braille, but the broader tech in the assistive industry.
Excellent. Well, Stuart Lawler from Sight and Sound, appreciate you just giving a little bit of a taste of the things that you are looking forward to working on this week at CSUN 2025. Do you want to just give us your website address so people can find out a little bit more about you and Sight and Sound?
Yeah, absolutely. People can visit us on the web at sightandsound.co.uk, or you can call us on 01604 798 070.
Are you happy for people to contact you directly? Yeah, you on social media?
Or? Absolutely. I'm, what am I now? I'm on X at Stuart Lawler and Stuart.Lawler, Lawler with an E, at sightandsoundtechnology.ie or sightandsound.co.uk.
Stuart Lawler, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm with Bree Fraser, who is a product manager with OneCourt. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio, Bree. OneCourt, what are you all about?
At OneCourt, we are making live sports more accessible. And so we're doing so by taking live gameplay and translating it into haptics so fans can feel the game with their fingertips.
So on the table between us, we have a device that is about the size of a laptop with a tactile overlay, so like a silicon sheet on the top. There are raised lines, and this is a basketball court.
Correct, yeah. And so by having different interfaces for each sport, we can customize them. So a basketball court is going to have different raised lines than a football field or than a baseball diamond. So a fan can feel the vibrations with that additional layer of tactile lines to help locate exactly where the play is.
And the experience that you're seeking to create is like a stream of information about the position of the ball in the game. So as I have my hands on the device, I can feel a haptic under my hands that tells me the relative position of the ball in the field of play.
Exactly. So we're really focused on two pieces of information. The first one is spatial. So where is the play in relation to the field or the court? And then what events are taking place? So if we use basketball for an example, you're able to feel the ball dribble across the court, and those haptic vibrations feel different than when a basketball shot is scored. So if they sink a basket and it's a two-point shot, that hoop will vibrate twice. So we're not only displaying where the ball is in real time, but what's happening in the play as well.
Talk me through the sports that you've trialed so far.
So we actually started with tennis. We were able to access some early data from Tennis Australia. So they were a really supportive partner back in our early days, about 2 or 3 years ago. We got access to that data and were able to translate a tennis ball simply moving across a line of 8 motors going back and forth. And we tested it with a student at the University of Washington who's a blind student, and he was able to describe where the tennis ball was across that court in real time. And so we thought, okay, we're onto something. Haptics can be a really useful way to describe where the play is happening. So once we were able to really prove that, we expanded into an array of motors. So right now in front of you, you have over 200 haptic motors making up the court or the field. We moved into American football to start. We did a proof of concept with the Kansas City Chiefs, and we were at their January 1st game. It was freezing. Our hands were cold. But that was our first time being live in venue, and we were able to prove that the technology works. And we translated that gameplay in under a second delay, which was pretty incredible.
And how are you getting that data? Because this isn't an optical, you know, camera looking at the field and trying to interpret what's going on. You're actually getting data from the venue.
Correct. Yeah. So every league does it a bit different. They have different underlying technology that's tracking the players, the ball, the actions that are taking place. But they're picking all that up mostly for use cases like sports betting or data analytics. And so when we realized that they had this data and it was near real time, we pitched One Court to them and we said, here's a opportunity to use your data and really increase accessibility and viewership of your sport through this tactile broadcast. And they were huge fans. And they gave us access to that data over the next year. And so we're in the process of finalizing those data agreements so that we can be translating live sports not only in venue, but also at home as well.
You have some experience with what you would call soccer, I would call football. let's talk about that. What's been your experience with that sport?
So soccer football has been really fun because we're actually showing two different dimensions of the play. So the first dimension is where the ball is in relation to the field, moving up and down the field, sometimes pretty quickly. And then the second view is actually the net. So once a goal is made, on each end of the field, just outside the bounds of the field, we have a blown up view of the net. And so a fan can feel, did that goal go in the bottom left corner or the top right corner? And so it gives that extra amount of detail to know where the ball went in.
Is it just ball games, or are there other sports that would work well in this format?
It's a great question. We've definitely focused on ball sports to start. Depends if you consider hockey as a ball sport, technically a puck. But being Canadian myself, I'm really excited for us to expand into hockey soon. And then the possibilities are endless, really. There's so many different things that you could portray on the surface of a haptic device. We've had requests for NASCAR, for F1, for many different sports, and other forms of entertainment, such as gaming. Jared, our co-founder and CEO, really wants to bring Pong onto the One Court device. So having two controllers and a ball bouncing left and right in a gaming context. So I'm excited about where we can go beyond just ball sports.
There's also an education component to this as well. I don't know a lot about basketball, for example, but just before we started recording, I worked my way through your basketball tutorial, which was great for somebody like me because it explained the different parts of the court and how they're described and the role, in the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. I think an educational piece was always really important to us for two reasons. One, we really want this to be an independent experience. So we want a fan to be able to check out a device from guest services if they're enjoying at a venue, sit down with the device, and be able to understand the play within the first few points. And so the tutorial is a great way to walk a fan through the tactile overlay, to be able to show them the haptics of what a certain play is going to feel like so that they know it in real time. And then the second part is an intuitive experience. Like, we want a fan to be able to cheer and enjoy the game right with everyone else in the arena. And so being able to share a bit of that information ahead of time through a tutorial is helpful.
Where are we on the journey with One Court? So this is your second generation device. How many are out in the wild? What's next? Is there a roadmap?
Yeah, so we currently have 20 devices out in the wild, as we say. They're out living at venues right now. We have a game tonight that we're supporting in the NBA. And so a fan can check that out from guest services and enjoy the game in real time. We're launching with one more NBA basketball team to wrap up this season, and then quickly moving on to MLB baseball here in the U.S. We're targeting 5 launch teams for this upcoming season. But really our vision long term is that One Court is a standard. It's a game day accommodation that every venue, every ballpark, every stadium should have, because it's opening up the game for everyone to be able to enjoy. And so that's our vision in venue. And then our vision at home is that a fan can use this from the comfort of their sofa and watch a game and enjoy it with their family. And be able to toggle through different sports, different games, just like you would a channel changer at home on a TV.
I asked you this during your presentation a little while ago, but for the benefit of our listeners, just talk about how robust or how rugged this device needs to be, particularly in those stadium situations. I'm a a football fan in the UK, and I know that when there's a goal, we all go nuts, right? So is this ready for, you know, that kind of celebration?
Yeah, that's a great question. We want fans to be able to celebrate, right? We want them to get up and cheer, and that's what One Court is about, right? Is be able to translate those live moments. So I would say we're in the progress of getting more and more durable. We do lots of drop tests in the lab at home in Seattle. So we have definitely broken a few ourselves, trying to see how many drops it can take. We haven't had one break yet in venue, and I know they've been dropped a few times by fans. But the biggest piece of feedback I've gotten was from an 11-year-old fan named Hank. And he said, I like to stand up and cheer when my favorite player scores a three-point shot. And so can you please add a strap to the device so I can stand up and it doesn't go flying? Because I think his dad had to catch it a few times from hitting the bottom of their seats. So that's something that's definitely on our mind. We've worked on making it waterproof. So I would assume if you pour a beer on it, the whole beer, some of it might make inside. But for the most part, the surface is pretty durable.
I'll try not to waste my beer.
Yeah.
What is your story? How did you get into this brie? Because you're not blind.
Yeah. So my background, I grew up in Canada, and I worked in high-performance sport there. So I worked with Volleyball Canada and supporting their female athletes make it to the Olympic level. And I realized the higher up you get in sport, the less and less, you could say, inclusive it is in terms of how many people get to enjoy. You start on a grassroots level and anyone can join a grassroots team, and as you move up and up, the selection gets more and more challenging to make the team, and you end up working with such a small pool, which of course is necessary when you're working at an Olympic level. But I recognized for me that sport was for everyone. Sport should be enjoyed by everyone and can be enjoyed by everyone, and so that's really where my motivation comes from. Sport is a huge part of my life growing up. I have 5 siblings myself, 3 that live in the UK and 2 here in North America with me. And so all of us have bonded through sport over our life. And so when I found out about One Court, I moved down to Seattle to attend the University of Washington. And I immediately fell in love with their mission, which really is that sports is for everyone. And so to be able to take sport and accessibility and technology and combine that all together to increase access, I fell in love with the idea. So it's been a wonderful journey to work with them the past year.
And how involved are blind sports fans in the design and development of this product?
Yeah, incredibly. I would say in my role as project manager, I'm working with fans every week. I'm on phone calls, feedback phone calls, working with organizations to do demos, to do product testing. You know, this P2 device that you have in front of you right now wouldn't exist without fan feedback of saying, you know, the device is too heavy. I need higher resolution. I need more motors than the device. I need to be able to swap it out with different sports. All those pieces of feedback came from fans. And so any point that I have to chat with a fan and hear their feedback, I'm writing it down, and our product team meets every Tuesday. So I'll be sharing this feedback with them next week, just based off even our conversation.
Well, as far as I know, you're not in the UK just yet, but hopefully one day that will happen. Mm-hmm. But until then, for people in the UK who want to know more, where can we get that information?
Mm-hmm. The best way to stay in touch with us is through our website and our newsletter. You'll be hearing directly from me every month on updates on new teams we're working with, new partnerships. We even made a trip out to the UK last summer for the Sports Loft Summit in London, UK. And so anytime there's opportunities that we're traveling, we'll let fans know. We have a global network of fans that we notify. And so sometimes we're even lucky enough to have folks travel to experience the device live.
Right, so how do we connect with you?
So best way is through our website. That's www.onecourt, so onecourt.io. On that website, there's a direct survey to fill out your name, your email, and your favorite sports team, which is an important part. And then you can stay in touch with us.
Bree Fraser from onecourt.io. Thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Dave.
We're with OneCourt and we are going to demonstrate their second generation P2 device. So this is about the size of a gaming laptop, I would say, maybe a little bit thicker, a couple of inches thick, I don't know. What would you say, Bree, in terms of dimensions?
It's about 2.5 inches thick and then 7 inches tall by 13 inches long.
Right, okay. So it's kind of like a I don't know, widescreen TV or something like that, I guess.
Like a mini tablet.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's sort of rectangular, and we have the basketball overlay. So this is a silicon sheet along the top, and I can feel there's a halfway line and a center circle, and then we've got, if this was soccer, I'd be saying penalty areas, but you know, those sort of semicircles around the where the hoop is. You can feel the hoop at each end, and then we've got some buttons in the top left-hand corner. So I'm just going to press the largest of those buttons now, and we'll see what happens.
Live game, right arrow to select.
Okay, live game, right arrow to select. So shall I press the right arrow?
Mm-hmm.
Playing live game. Use large circular info button for game details like score and time left. Use this small circular home button to return to the main menu for tutorials. We recommend placing the device on your lap and both hands flat on the surface to follow the action. Enjoy the game.
Well, I will. So, yeah, I think we can also maybe hear a little bit of commentary as well. Is that possible?
Yeah, I'll hit play here.
Yeah, so if you were in a live situation.
Beal working on Kessler. Little dribble hesitation. Lost the handle, regathers. Four on the shot clock.
Shot.
Done.
Score.
Okay, and I could then feel the haptic vibration moving towards the hoop at the right-hand end of the field. The game is resumed, and the haptic is now moving to the left. There we are, and we could also then feel the haptic at the other end. So it was end-to-end then. There was a goal, not a goal, what do you call it, a hoop?
Basket, shot.
A basket, shot at one end, and then straight to the other end.
Miss.
Oh, there was a miss then. So this is end-to-end stuff, and we can get a little bit of a status update. I'm going to press the large circular button.
Info. Score is just 46 to Suns 56. Second quarter, 2 minutes and 18 seconds left. Game active.
Okay, so you get all that information in audio, and at the same time, the haptic shows you where the ball is in play.
Shot. Score.
And then we are a very quick taster of the OneCourt tactile sport experience.
Shot. Score. 2 points, Jess.
That's all we've got time for this week on Tech Talk. It's not the end of the conferences, though. Join us next week where we'll be bringing you some highlights from RNIB's Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference in Glasgow. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions, suggestions, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from me, Callum Stoneman, and Hubert Pavelkovich, bye for now.
See you next time.